Insan was deployed to a mountainous region of central Afghanistan, where he worked in public health education for an international NGO. He stayed in a hotel for several weeks while he explored the regional parts of the province, investigating the work he was about to commence. In that time, he came to know Z, a restaurant owner who wore a dirty apron, smoked cigarettes while he cooked, and cut meat on an unhygienic table. Z was used to drifters like Insan and took a liking to him. He often invited Insan to smoke marijuana with him behind his restaurant. Insan would always decline the offer to smoke, but he would chat with Z while Z got high. Insan quickly learned that Z was not a normal Afghan. Z grew flowers, which were seen as a luxury in Afghanistan, and Insan would bring him seeds for his garden. Z had adopted a crippled black crow who hopped around his restaurant on one leg. He used to feed the bird scraps, and he told Insan the crow was his best customer. One evening, Insan noticed the crow had disappeared, and Z, who was quite upset, told Insan that the crow had hopped into the kitchen and then into the tandoor and had it incinerated itself. Z was also fond of dogs, which was strange in Afghan society, as dogs were traditionally considered unclean animals. Insan told him that in other countries, people liked dogs, gave them names, and kept them as pets. After several days, Z came back to Insan with a stray black puppy that usually lazed under an apple tree near his restaurant. "Let's give this dog a name," he said. "I want this dog to be fast and quick and be a good watchdog. Maybe we can use him for dog fights when he's older. Let's call him Electricity." Z had brought electricity to his powerless village. Despite Z's great ambitions, the dog didn't move from under the apple tree. After a month or two, Z came back to Insan and said, "I don't think Electricity is a suitable name. I'm going to give him away." When Z learned Insan was staying in a hotel, he was outraged. "I will take you in as my family. Come and stay with me in my village," he said. Insan was surprised by the invitation, but he was also aware of just how significant the offer was. Only family members were allowed in these rural villages. The only way Insan could enter as a stranger was by invitation. Z's offer of refuge and his invitation to become part of his family touched Insan's heart. He accepted. When Insan joined Z in the village, he immediately regretted his decision. He had not realized it, but Z expected Insan to live in his house with his mother, two wives, and six children. Insan tried to politely decline the offer, but Z was quick to negotiate. "I'll build a separate room for you," Z said. Unwilling to cause offense to Z and his family, Insan agreed to this arrangement. Understandably, the villagers were suspicious of Insan, the newcomer. They knew nothing about him except for Z's assurances of his character, assurances established during a three-week acquaintance. Insan built trust in the village community by not making eye contact with any of the women in the village for an entire year. If women passed him in the village, he would look down at the ground and step aside on the path, acting against his own nature, which was to address, greet, and look people in the face. He found the experience dehumanizing, but with time, people began to trust him enough to use him as a doctor. They brought their loved ones to see him, which fostered more goodwill and a growing relationship with the community. Insan moved into the new room under the impression that he was going to live alone, but Z and Z's mother had other plans. "Why would you want to live alone?" Z said. "It's strange." "No, you cannot live on your own. You are family. You will have a family member live with you." Insan asked if they could respect his desire to live alone, and they refused. "You mean you don't like your family members? You don't want us to live with you?" Z responded. Insan blustered and argued. He wanted privacy. He wanted solitude. He wanted his own space. They told him they would start knocking before entering his room, but they still didn't think he should lock his door. Insan thought of the Afghan author Timim Ansari, who wrote that Afghans could have a space of solitude by being with another person, that the Afghan sense of group was just as real as their sense of self, perhaps more so. When Insan first read that, he thought, if that is true, Afghans don't understand solitude. After much argument, Insan finally relented, realizing he would never be allowed to live alone in the village. "If there has to be someone, just make sure he doesn't talk," he told Z. They sent him 15-year-old Nadir. From this point on, Insan's life was turned upside down. Nadir arrived at Insan's door looking sheepish, devastated, lost. Maybe this will work, Insan thought. Not only did Nadir not talk, he could not talk. He was vacant. He was immersed in his own world. They would exchange greetings and that was it. One day, Insan asked Nadir, "There are theories that say there are seven heavens on earth and we are currently in one of those heavens. Which one do you think we are in?" Nadir contemplated the question and then said, "The fourth one, because then there are heavens below us and heavens above us." Insan warmed to this humble, unassuming character. He perceived a great wisdom in this closed book. Nights in the house together were particularly quiet. Insan would contemplate the calamity of war and scribble in his notebook, while Nadir stared into space. The only sound would be the crackling of the fire or the elements outside, a whistling wind from the grandfather mountain or the rum-dum drum of a downpour. Nadir's slow opening up to Insam was unexpected and beautiful. Perhaps it was Afghan culture to reveal one's deepest emotions and feelings at night, a trait belonging to their ancient oral culture. Perhaps in this closed society, where people so often couldn't speak their mind, people felt protected by the cover of darkness and encouraged by the warmth of a fire. "My mind is just gone," Nadir broke the silence. His voice quavered. Insan's breath stopped in his mouth, and he looked over at Nadir, who was staring at the roof, grief-stricken. "How can I help you? Why are you so sad?" Insan asked, but Nadir did not say any more that night.